Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Call into us today for your flu and COVID vaccines at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
So it's budget day tomorrow. We have a panel of people with us now to discuss what to expect, the politics of it all, and whether voters will be impressed with what's expected to be a fairly cautious outlay. But before I introduce our guests, a reminder that on Wednesday, both Minister Michael McGrath and Minister Pascal Donoghue will be here with me in the studio from 10 a.m. So if you want to put your question directly to the ministers, you can get in touch now. Just email us at todaycb at rte.ie. Now though, let's welcome our panel. We've Eoin McGee, financial planner and author of How to Make Your Money Work, Alison O'Connor, columnist with the Sunday Times, Elaine Loughlin, political editor with the Irish Examiner, and Suzanne Rogers, who's economic and social analyst with Social Justice Ireland. And you're all very welcome. Thank you for being here. Elaine, I'm going to start with you for the overview, really, of what we're expecting now at this stage. There's a lot of detail in the papers over the last, say, 7 days or so, particularly over the weekend.
And you could probably even argue, Claire, that there's been a lot of detail in the newspapers and on the media over the last few months. It does seem like every year the leaking and the budget negotiations, budget speculation starts earlier and earlier. But certainly over the weekend, we did get a good sense of where things are at, the priorities for government. And we heard that phrase, working families, over and over again. And I think that's where the government certainly will be focusing a lot of attention, along with pensioners. Obviously, they will get a shout out and we will have increases in all social welfare payments. But I think it will be to help those people in the middle, struggling workers, as members of government have been signalling in recent days.
Yeah, they've been managing the message, though, very carefully. People will have noticed, particularly in the last week or so, you know, dampening down expectations to a certain extent. Where do you think the headline will be from this budget?
Yeah, well, I think there's a number of issues at play here. You know, we do, for the very first time in over a decade, have a Fianna Fáil finance minister in Michael McGrath. And I think Fianna Fáil will want to put their stamp on the finance brief on taxes, that they can go to the electorate and say, this is what we did, this is what we stand for, and perhaps this is what we would do in another coalition after the next general election. And I think they also want to get away from the sense that they are a party that can be prudent, that can manage the public finances and manage them into the long term. So one of those areas where we will see movement on tomorrow is this infrastructure fund. This will be a long-term savings fund that will funnel those very precarious corporation taxes into, to both help with a significant deficit when it comes to pensions in the decades ahead, but also to use for larger scale projects, whether that's road infrastructure, housing, healthcare, long beyond the next 5, even 10 years. And then again, I mentioned it already, the election is on the horizon. We know, obviously, we'll have this year's budget. Potentially, we might have one more before the coalition goes to the public. But I think eking out their own little wins, both Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and to a lesser extent, the Green Party, will be on many minds in the coming hours. And I think that's where you'll see a bit of differentiation between the parties happening.
So Fianna Fáil, you're saying, are likely to try and grab a headline on the tax front, while being seen to be very prudent and careful.
You would imagine so, yes. And this issue of USC has been raised in recent days and weeks, Michael McGrath pushing to decrease the rate, that 4.5% rate, possibly down to 4% of USC. They are the party that brought in USC. So I think Micheál Martin will be eager to bring down that rate and point to the future and say that we would do that over multiple budgets if you give us the chance, speaking directly to voters.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about that then, and about the tax changes that we might be likely to see. Suzanne, if that cut in USC were to happen down to 4%, would you welcome it?
I think for us, the taxation conversation just needs to be so much broader in general. So we saw the Commission on Taxation and Welfare release their publication, was it last year? It was a huge piece of work. We've had the committee have also done their report. And the conversation is, how do we pay for the services we want? So I think that's really where any sort of tax cuts need to sit in. NERI did a report again earlier on this week saying this is not how they see the budget should be happening. They will be looking again, putting money into services, that they don't see tax cuts as being prudent at this time of the budget cycle. And again, I'm kind of conscious conscious as well that when we look at inflation and all the work that's being done to inflation, if we increase our core social welfare rates, that's not going to have the same impact as on inflation as it would when we look at putting money back into people's pockets through the tax bracket.
So you're not in favour of any tax cuts, is that what you're saying?
It would be, again, we would be looking at the overall system. I mean, this sounds crazy, but we are an outlier in Europe in terms of our extremely low tax take, but we are very heavily reliant on income tax, corporation tax and VAT. So in general, because again, when we talk about taxation, you and I, we always think of our payslip. That's the first thing we think of immediately.
And we pay very high taxes in that regard.
This is it. So again, you know, the conversation really needs to be looking at other ways of raising revenue. What is a thriving economy for if it's not to put back into the system, if it's not to provide the services? Like, we forfeit, I think, $4.5 billion a year in terms of tax expenditures, and we're not actually reviewing them on a regular basis. So there's definitely other ways to increase tax revenue without maybe looking at something like tax cuts like that way.
But Owen, undoubtedly people are still really struggling. You know, we've had this cost of living crisis now for nigh on 2 years, and people would welcome a bit back, wouldn't they, on the tax front?
They would welcome things back and a bit back in their pocket, but that's my big fear. My big fear here is we have taken the pain of interest rate rises over the last couple of years, and effectively we've taken our medicine. Sometimes it takes a while for the medicine to kick in. We're starting to see that there's hope that interest rates in particular have leveled off because inflation and maybe the economies are starting to slow down a little bit. So the inflation, the interest rate rises are starting to have their effect. The problem on my concern that I would have is I think everyone's going to get a little bit here. I think everyone, because it's a pre-election budget. That's what it is. Whether it's one or two, it's still a pre-election budget. And I think everyone's going to get a little bit. And the money that's been taken out of the system because people's mortgages have gone up could effectively be put back in now if you're paying less tax or you're getting mortgage interest relief or you're getting other things. I think, and I really would have a concern here, inflation is not affecting everybody equally. If your shopping bill goes from 100 to 110 euros a week and you're on 200 euros a week, that really, really hurts. If you're on 2,000 euros a week, it still has an impact, but it doesn't hurt as much. And I think this budget really needs to focus at the people who are on the lower end of the scale in terms of salaries and incomes, because they're the people who are hurting the most. I'm not saying there aren't other people in the squeeze middle who are hurting. There are, but they're the people who are hurting most. And what I would say is I would be worried about how much money we put back into the economy, because have to be unwound again.
Okay,
at some stage.
you're saying that inflation could be impacted again and we could be headed back up.
And in really simple terms, people tend to understand the idea that if inflation's running at 6% and you get a 6% pay rise, you've beat inflation, well done. But if we all get a 6% pay rise, we've just added to the inflation problem and we can end up in a hyperinflation environment. The same applies as if you get a 6% tax cut and your take-home pay goes up, we could end up in a hyperinflation environment. So I think they need to tread really carefully, and they have to be very sure that what they're doing is good for the economy, not just their votes.
Mm-hmm. And Alison, you're dealing with two ministers who are both prudent now, apparently, in everything I read over the weekend. We don't just have prudent Pascal, but it is, as Owen says, an election budget. So, you know, you'll have people in both their parties saying, come on, splash the cash.
I mean, if you go back, Elaine mentioned that the last time we had a Fianna Fáil Minister for Finance, Brian Lenihan, and the budgets that were being delivered at that time, and billions being taken out rather than billions at disposal to spend, it would have been impossible to imagine back then that there would be this much money, that even with this much money around the place, that there would be difficulties and that there would be ministers for finance and public expenditure talking about the need to be. I watched on Instagram Pascal Donoghue, it was in the last day or two, and he had a budget message, and he mentioned the word, in a brief message, the word safe was mentioned 5 times. You see, if you go back to the summer economic statement, the mention of 65 billion then, and I mean, by God, did that set up expectations. Since then, you're looking at the bad news on corporation tax. You're looking at, there's still a war ongoing. You still have the international outlook isn't great. Warnings from the ESRI, warnings from IFAC. And then you look at what you've just featured before we came in, what's going on in Israel over the weekend. Oil prices already affected. So you very much see the need for prudence there. But as everyone else has alluded to, you are heading into an election. The government very conscious of Sinn Féin. You have the fact that it's a coalition government, you've competing. The fact that we are, as I understand it, the tax package has been agreed this morning and it's going to be a mix of USC and tax bans and all bans will benefit. That's an amalgam of what Fine Gael and what Fianna Fáil wanted. And we also see that we have a Green Party that are really in trouble at the moment, that they will want to have there. So the issue is that I think that it's so much. I know that Michael McGrath, this could be his only time delivering. We don't know what's going to happen. This could be his only budget as Minister for Finance. He's obviously going to want to make his stamp. As I understand it, I think he wants part of that legacy in terms of these funds that he's going to set up. I think anyone who heard the economist from IFAC on Morning Ireland last week, Eddie Casey, talking about how much the billions that were going to be needed for climate measures in the next couple of years, like 5 billion euros. I mean, it's utterly extraordinary. So the need for us to prepare for that, and yet, as we said, it's the competing things of the election budget. Yeah. The other thing I've heard is that childcare costs haven't yet been agreed. That's under for discussion today, and the social protection package. Mm-hmm. But that on the mortgage interest relief, it is. And I mean, I know that Michael McGrath, I think, and Pascal Donohue are very wary on that, on how that. But it's going to be very targeted and capped, and that it will be, you know, very much targeted to those. How they're going to go about doing that, I'm not sure.
Okay, well,
this talk of
let's talk about some of those things
revenue,
now.
Yeah.
Elaine, just on the mortgage interest relief, mm-hmm. That will be controversial if it goes ahead. What are you hearing might be there on that front?
Yeah, and as Alison said, it will be extremely targeted. This is something I think that Sinn Féin may point to in their post-budget speeches tomorrow as Mary Lou MacDonald's party perhaps forcing the arm of government, because it's something that Sinn Féin have been calling for many months now, is help with those people, especially in tracker mortgages, who've seen their monthly payments go up by 500, 600, 700 euro. So the government is keen to put something in place. I had heard from government sources that they were looking at something around giving a month's mortgage repayment back. So that would be roughly 1,200 to 1,400. Now, that was scaled back significantly last night, and I think expectations were being rolled back on that. And I think maybe the most people may see now is 1,000, possibly even less. And given how tricky it will be to decide which groups get it, which don't, it yeah, may well, actually be you know, the middle of the year, but by the time we see it.
People will remember when the energy credit first came up, people said, why don't you target this? And the government told us it was too hard to target this. But now are they saying we can target the mortgage interest relief at particular groups?
Well, I suppose there are different groups of mortgage holders. You have fixed, you have tracker, and people on different rates at different times as well in their mortgage. So that will all be looked at. But I think that will definitely go down to the wire. And it's something that the three government leaders will have to discuss further.
Owen?
I just, the whole interfering with the mortgage interest relief, it has to be unwound at some stage. I get it. I think we've taken our pain. I know I'm repeating myself, but we've taken our pain with the increase in interest rates. I don't foresee, and of course everything can change, but right now it doesn't look like that we're going to go much further higher. We may plateau for quite some time. But my fear with this is, who gets it? Who's going to get targeted? I think there are certain people out there. Remember, we've gone from being one of the most expensive countries in the world for mortgages to being the third cheapest.
Some people, I read over the weekend, are paying 9%.
Yeah, and they're the people who need the help. But I think there's a better way of helping this. I think, and you could imagine this one is going to sink like a ship, right? But we were already doing it. Government are already doing it in a way, being the lender. Why not get out there and be the lender and take some of those vulture funds out of it? Because then that's the only way you're really going to control it. People should not have to pay 8 and 9% when we're probably a normal rate of around 4 or 5% right now.
So the state should buy those mortgages
I think they should help, and maybe I should have thought that one through a little bit more before it comes back at me on Twitter now for the afternoon. But I just think if you're going to help people, help them in a way that's sustainable. You give mortgage interest relief of some description right now, and you do have to take it back again at some
stage. Suzanne, you wanted to come in there.
Just, I'm so conscious, like, we still have almost 5,000 households in mortgage arrears for 10 years or more from the last crash, and in the Code of Conduct on Mortgage Arrears from 2013, Section 4, Resolution, there's a long list of things that the lender, as in the bank, can do with somebody who's in mortgage arrears, temporarily reducing the interest rate and permanently reducing the interest rate for those households who are struggling, is there in the CCMA. Now, I could I'm going out on a limb here, I could probably count on the fingers of one hand the amount of households who've actually received that from a bank. But that's already there.
But the solution to people who are paying 8 and 9% is to get away from those companies, right? If the state's not going to step in and set up a bank to do that, Claire, you had Brian Hayes in here a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about if you're doing 2 years at the agreed repayments, full capital interest, we might look at you, right? That's where the force could be put down and put pressure on to say, look, these people are paying 2,000 euros a month. If they move to you, they're going to pay 1,200 euros a month. It doesn't matter if it's capital interest or wage. It's much more affordable, and they're behaving well with their existing ridiculous rate. Let's give them support to move over.
Yeah, I suppose it's worth pointing out that this is the first kind of semi-normal budget we've had for a number of years. If you think about COVID, the COVID years, you think about with the war in Ukraine last year, I think inflation running at 10%. We're looking more at 5% next year. But the government has faced the dilemma that we became very used to being given money during COVID. It's a very populist time in politics. Expectations are high. And as we've mentioned so many times already, this prospect of a budget and the government trying to play catch up with proposals and pledges that Sinn Féin makes. But wouldn't it be a most desperate pity that we would have all of this money, all of these billions, and not that this budget does not in some way lay down, as I've mentioned earlier, with these funds. Like, if we don't do it now, it's absolute madness. And it will be whatever about the political parties, but I'm sure the weight of this is on Pascal Donoghue and on Michael McGrath, in terms of that they have an opportunity now to write themselves into the history books by doing something useful with this money, the interest back on this money, actually spending this money, even an infrastructure fund for if we have a downturn again. That's where it will make a real difference. But it remains to be seen what, you know, we do for all of the leaks. Yeah, we do have to wait till tomorrow to see what happens
the
there.
The reality of that, though, that's a hard sell politically.
Absolutely.
Can we talk about social welfare payments? 12 euro on the pension, is that the latest, or will it be a bit more?
Potentially a bit more, Claire. Certainly it'll be a minimum of 12 euro, not just on the pension, it'll be across the board. Social welfare payments will increase. And on top of that, you will see the once-off payments, like Alison has mentioned, people are now expecting them. So we know we'll have a double payment of child benefit before Christmas. The lump sum payments that we saw last year across disability, fuel allowance, carers allowance, living alone allowance, we expect they will be repeated. Now, last year, people saw between 400 and 500, depending on the allowance, not expecting that level of a bonus this year. But certainly people can expect money, a lump sum payment in their pockets as a result of that. And then we'll have the energy credit as well. That's still being worked out. We won't get the 200 euro that we got last year and into the spring.
200 by three, so it won't be at that level.
It won't be at that level. Now they're deciding whether they give it in two payments of a larger sum or perhaps three payments of a smaller 100 to 150 sum. And I think that probably might be, politically speaking, the best option, because you could possibly give two before Christmas and one into the spring right before you go to local and European elections.
Okay, Suzanne, just on the social welfare front, so 12 euro or thereabouts, possibly a bit more. That's very far away from the 25 euro that you were hoping to see for pensioners.
Very much so. And I think with the 25 euro, what we have to remember is the purchasing power of our money. So your pension is buying you less than it was a couple of years ago. It needed at least 25 euro just simply in order to be able to put the same basket of goods, same supermarket shopping, the heat on, the light on. So this is in real terms, this is a decrease in income in real terms. That's what we're seeing. It is unfortunate. And again, I think, you know, you've kind of said it, that 220 euro a week is your core rate of social welfare. That has to put the roof over your head, food, heat, light, your mobile phone, your haircuts, clothes, shoes, transport, put the bins out, TV licence. There's loads more. I mean, with all the budgeting will in the world, that's almost, when I say almost impossible, I think it is actually impossible to make that money go. And that is worth less. And again, when we look at our poverty level is, I think it's 308 euro a week. Anybody under that is considered a poverty. We have the MESL, which is the minimum essential standard of living. They work that out at about 250, and that doesn't include your accommodation costs. And then if you go bankrupt, the ISI will allow you an RLE. And again, we're looking there at around that sort of 250, 300 euro mark.
Okay.
So all of these figures show us straight away that 220 isn't going to cut it, never mind adding another 12 onto it.
Owen, can I talk to you about this tax rent credit? Because there's a lot of talk around that being increased from 500 euro where it is at the moment. Now, at one point we were hearing it was going to be doubled. I think we're about 800 is what we're hearing now. But only 50% of renters claimed it because it's so complicated and difficult to get it.
Yeah, there's a couple of things going on there. You have to engage with your landlord. You have to get you have to engage with taxman, with revenue, which a lot of people are actually afraid of. We leave a whole pile of unclaimed tax credits on the table every year because people are afraid to go to revenue for anything. They just want to keep their head down.
This particular one, because I was looking at it last week, it's really tricky. You've got to go to your landlord and say, I need your LPT details. I need your revenue number. I need your residency status. Like, very few people will be comfortable asking those questions of their landlord.
Particularly at the moment, Claire. Particularly when there's no property to rent and you just want to be the idyllic tenant that never gives the landlord any hassle and you just don't want to rock the boat at all. And I do think it could be made an awful lot simpler. All you need to do is prove that you're paying rent. Do you really need to prove that your landlord's circumstances are actually nothing to do with you? Whether they're up to date with their LPT or not shouldn't be up to you to check on behalf of revenue. But what I would say about this is that there are easier ways of doing this in terms of just do it as a standard credit. Prove that you're renting, whatever way that is. Show me the lease agreement, whatever that is. Now we know you're renting. We know what your rent is and make the payment into it. It's interesting, Elaine mentioned earlier that mortgage interest relief might be 1,200 or 1,400, which is a mortgage repayment. When it was at 1,000 for this rent credit, they were saying that would be a free month's rent. I'm not sure where TDs are renting houses at 1,000 euros a month that turns out to be a free month rent. But any improvement on that front, I do think would make it simpler. I will say people are afraid of engaging with revenue. They are one of the best departments to deal with. In terms of when you do actually reach out, people think, oh, revenue, just want to collect as much taxes. I'm going to be honest with you. I do feel that any time you engage, they always look for the way for people to be able to use the tax system the way it's supposed to be used and pay the right tax, which often means they say, have you tried this? Have you done this? They're excellent to deal with. So don't let, if it's a fear of engaging with revenue is the reason why you're not claiming your rent credit, don't let that be it, because you'll be very surprised how good they are.
Okay. Childcare, you mentioned this earlier on, and we know it was a major plank of what the Greens wanted from this government to reduce childcare costs. They wanted to bring them down by 25% again this year. Is that not happening?
Well, I think it was very telling yesterday before the leaders met, both Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath. Pascal Donoghue had three meetings, one with Social Protection Minister Heather Humphreys, one with Health Minister Stephen Donnelly, and the third with Children's Minister Roderick O'Gorman. So we can see those three areas are where the difficulties are right now as the final hours remain before this budget. And I think the problem with the Children's Minister, or he has the problem that he went out last year and said that he would reduce childcare fees by 50% over two budgets. Now, Mr O'Gorman did very well last year, got the 25% decrease, which has really made a significant difference to parents who have been paying massive childcare fees. But whether he can get that extra 25% this time is really difficult to say, as I said, hours out from the budget. And he will have to weigh up whether he does that, which would be a massive political win for him, for the Green Party, for the government as a whole, or whether he listens to the calls of childcare providers, because we had those in the childcare industry out picketing outside Leinster House only a few weeks ago, and providers are saying that we cannot continue at the level that we are with the funding that we have. We have recruitment and retention issues, and unless we get an increase in core funding, we simply won't be there. So it's a balancing act of, do you reduce the actual cost of childcare and parents see it directly in their pockets, or do you ensure that there's actually a childcare provider there for parents to access by increasing core funding?
The irony of this, and I was reading this morning in the Irish Times, it was one of the childcare providers saying that when one of her staff has a child, they often leave the business because they can't afford to pay the childcare fees.
Mm-hmm. And that's not surprising given the levels of salary that people in the industry are on right now.
Yeah, how do you judge that in terms of the importance for the Greens getting that win, Alison?
I think it's very, but I mean, it's very significant, really. And if you look at, okay, more recent opinion polls, things have improved, but it's generally acknowledged that the Greens are in difficulty at the moment. The other parties will tell you, government parties will tell you that, particularly down the country, that there is a lot of anger towards the Greens. Much of it, I would consider, is sort of is misplaced, but it's there nonetheless, particularly against Eamon Ryan. So they need tangible wins out of this, and certainly childcare is one that they've been identified with. But I mean, all the mood music over the last few weeks is that Roger Corman is not going to get as much as last year. Mm-hmm. And I suppose the other interesting thing is, I suppose they will, the obvious one is that for climate, for things to happen in climate, but that doesn't seem to register with people, despite everything that's going on in the world climate-wise. Climate wins for the government, for the Greens, are not necessarily something, okay, people talk about bus fares and public transport fares. But outside of that at the moment, it's just something that doesn't seem to register with voters, I think, as being something they want to support the Green parties.
Yeah, well, when people are pinched, you know, at the end of the week or the end of the month, it's difficult, really.
Yeah, but you know, the other thing I think we haven't addressed here, and you talk, it goes to the universality and all of that, is that, like, we all see this. There's such a twin track at the moment in our society. There are people with oodles of money who are buying huge cars, you know, who have money to spend on luxury goods, who still, I mean, the fact that we had the most savings in Europe coming out of COVID, and people who are with full employment in the economy, who are making very good wages. I was even talking to a taxi driver yesterday who told me it's business is great. Any taxi drivers that I ask, and I think that's a real sign that
people are out.
There's so much that people are out. He was saying you could, if you work now, he said you have to work hard at it, but you could make a hundred grand a year. And then there are people who Suzanne has been talking about, who are suffering hugely and under really intense pressure. But this, because of the way we opt for universality, sometimes we're told we don't have the systems, but really an awful lot of it is to do with the fact that it's a coalition government and you have parties wanting to target different segments. But that twin track thing is very obvious, I think, at the moment.
Well, that's the greatest argument against universal payments, isn't it, Suzanne? Can I just bring you on this to finish? Like, we're looking again at going into another winter where people who have all that money, as described by Alison, are going to get energy credits.
And yeah, this is it. Like, it isn't the best way, I think, to target. And again, I appreciate, you know, as you said, they were looking for something to do really, really quickly. This is the simplest, quickest way to do it. But we've had, like, that was last year or the year before, like, you know, things have changed. And what we have now, even with something like the energy credits, if you talk to the Money Advice and Budgeting Service or the Vincent DePaul or Protestant Aid, they are seeing record levels of arrears, people coming into the winter with huge arrears already. So definitely, I mean, targeting it has to be really the way ahead, making a real difference in these households. We didn't even touch on the child poverty piece, which is, again, really key. Children live in poverty, in households in poverty, and that's transmitted generationally. If we can make the difference through childcare, through education, when they're tiny, that'll pay off
in the
long
term.
Well,
we were told this was a priority of government, and there's a child poverty unit in Leo Varadkar's department, in the Taoiseach's department. Are you saying that that's not borne out by what the government is doing?
I'd be delighted to see what we get tomorrow for that. I mean, you know, he has said that he wants to see Ireland as the best country in Europe within which to be a child, and yet we've got almost 190,000 children living, and as you said, in a country where one conversation in the media is surplus, budget surplus, and the next one is children with special needs can't get a school bus. So again, what's the point of the economy? What's the point of all of this money if it isn't to look after the most vulnerable in our society?
All right. Well, we'll find out tomorrow exactly what is happening when Michael McGrath gets to his feet in the Dáil in the afternoon. But for now, thank you all very much for coming in. We'll take a quick break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.